It's the Tiltcast, episode 690, going full Hobbit.
And this week, guys, we talk more Slay the Spire 2, some Tape to Tape, a decent indie, Atomicrops, and Diablo 4's newest expansion. Stay tuned.
Second breakfast. And we're back. It's the Tiltcast. Got the can cracks. It's an M-Red show. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason.
I'm Rusty. Oh my god, a new voice or newish voice. I'm back.
Sorta.
I'm sorta back or I'm sorta new. I don't know.
Something like that. Yeah. I
mean, both of those things. All of them. It is the spring summertime up in the Northlands.
Spring summertime, man. It's hot as balls over here. Me and Jason are flipping dying. Jason's He's putting together his pool. I thought about doing it, and I walked outside to mow the front lawn, and I was like, no, I don't want to do that today. It says it feels like 103.
Oh, that sounds fantastic, dude. I've been cold for months. The fact that I can now survive with just a long sleeve shirt and no like thermals for the first time it's nuts. Like, it's 70 degrees up here. And if you're standing in the sun, that's kind of nice. But if you're not standing in the sun, it's still kind of chilly for me. I think that I could acclimate to the higher temperatures down south a lot easier, mainly because I think I went full lizard when I lost all this weight.
As people often do.
Yeah, I went full lizard. I thrive in warmer temperatures, and boy, it's been nice for the last couple days. Like, I really have been enjoying, being outdoors, like, a lot. So, I'm very much over the winter sads now. I'm in a much better mood, and I'm just ready to go, like, overly ready to go, to the point where it's almost painful I'm ready to go.
Well, it's about damn time.
Yeah, I mean, it really has been a rough, rough winter, and I have been looking forward to spring and summer. Oh, since it got cold. So, glad it's here. I really kind of miss I guess I don't necessarily miss the being completely under the magnifying glass of Oklahoma, because it can get kind of oppressive. That is the word. To the point where if you don't have AC, you can't really survive. That's not something that I want. But I can turn off the heat here, and I don't have AC in my place. Just have one little fan going, and it's fine. It's perfectly fine. Now, it'll get a little warmer, and I might end up having to put in a window AC unit. But I'm not going to, I'm not chomping at the bit for that. Nor do I have the money for it anymore. My money went elsewhere.
Did it, though?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It went elsewhere, dude. As part of the whole getting heck outdoors thing, I had this great idea. I had this little corner of my backyard that was historically used as a garden. It was waist-high weeds when I moved in. I have been going through the gardening YouTube a lot, like to the point where now that is all that serves me. It's science videos, gaming videos, and how to garden. That's basically what my YouTube looks like. I have converted that piece of crap little corner of the backyard into an impromptu garden with 3 raised beds, 25 5-gallon grow bags, a cucumber trellis, and now I'm going to be adding another raised bed, which is going to probably be in a square configuration, which is going to be 3 foot by 3 foot, I'm pretty sure is what it comes out to be. I just picked it up. It was on sale for $50, and I was like, okay, I'll do that. I'm growing things now. I have like an herb tower and an herb cart, like a grow thing that has like 7 different bays. I got 2 flower beds out front. Got flowers in the front of on my doorsteps. I've practically turned into a grandmother.
You've always been like this. If you guys don't know, a long time ago we did a stream for Extra Life, and Rusty didn't want to play 7 Days to Die. We did it anyway, knowing that we could definitely play it for 24 hours straight. And Rusty turned into the camp mom. Not killing zombies. Not doing anything other than organizing cabinets and cooking and storing and organizing the entire stream.
And that was 24 hours of me doing that. The only time I ever actually picked up a weapon was when the zombies had the audacity to knock on the door. And I never left the house. I would lock up the door and make sure everybody was inside, make sure there was medical supplies for anybody that, that needed it for, when they were out foraging and stuff. I yelled at them for not putting things in the right spots, to the point where I'm like, use these boxes.
Oh, Diddy.
Drop all of your shit in these boxes and I will sort it out.
So at one point, I thought Matt was going to rage quit.
I mean, don't mess with my organization. It's imperative that I know where all the paper was so that I could make shotgun shells.
But what I'm saying is this is just you in real life.
It kind of is. Like, when I do a thing, I go hard on that thing.
Applies to masturbation, right?
Of course it does. but yeah, that's the thing is, like, I will get fixated on the thing. Like, this was supposed to be a small project. I was going to do 3 raised beds and just make, just grow cucumbers. That was it. Cucumbers and dill. That was really the most I was going to do. I was going to throw
is the dill for pickling?
Dill for pickling. I wanted to do traditional pickles, like vinegar pickles, but also wanted to try my hand at fermented pickles. And the thing about pickle plants is that they just continually produce as long as it's in season and you give them enough water. You will have so many cucumbers to make pickles that you'll be giving them away. That's what I want. But that expanded. So it started out with just those 2 plants. And then I'm like, okay, well, I needed to get marigolds because marigolds go well with, these things. They're a pollinating plant. brings in pollinators, and I need pollinators to make the cucumbers happen. Like, okay, fine. So I get those. And then I'm like, there's some other things that I would really like to get. I kind of could use garlic, but garlic is one of those things you can't really plant in the spring. You plant the garlic in the fall, and then it has to winter in the ground, which I didn't know. Oh my god, what is going on?
Nothing.
You tried a...
I dropped my phone and it auto-called everybody.
That's nice.
That was lovely.
That's, yeah, everybody reaches for their phone.
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, I wanted to do garlic, but I figured out I can't do garlic, but you could do onions, as long as you start with onion starts and not onion seeds. Because onion seeds requires them to bulb, and then overwinter, and then you get them in the spring. Like, but if you have starts, you can get them to bulb that year. So I'm like, okay, so I'll just go to the store and get some onion starts. And I'm like, okay, this turned into, I need herbs. So basil, oregano, rosemary, thyme, a different kind of dill, and like starting to put things in seed trays and start them because it was, still cold outside. I couldn't put this stuff in the ground. It was still cold. It was still frosting at the time. I'm like, what am I going to do? So seed trays and grow lights and a bunch of, a bunch of like heating pads to get the, the soil temps up the right temperature, and water bottles and spray bottles and, and fertilize. I could use some cabbage. So I decided to go get some cabbage, cabbage seeds. And I'm going to be like, okay, raised planter for that. It exploded. I have lemongrass, I have potatoes, tomatoes, jalapeno peppers, green peppers, two different kinds of dill, all of this, all of the herbs that I said, five bags of onion starts, and oh god.
You sound like a hobbit.
He is going fairly Samwise on us.
I even started a lavender bed, which lavender is one of those, it's a flower that just is notorious for being difficult to start. And I had one stretch that was full sun, gets full sun all year round, alongside my garage, and I sat there for an hour and a half baking the crap out of my neck because I didn't have any sunblock. So I have hardcore redneck right now. But I dug up a flower bed and laid soil and sowed seed, and I have gone full on domestic. And I'm having the time of my life. My bank account isn't, but I'm having the time of my life right now. I'm having a lot of fun. It's going to be way more fun when stuff starts to grow, because right now it's all hopes and prayers. It's becoming a thing. Like, I was only going to do potatoes, or I wasn't going to do potatoes at all. But my mom said, hey, you're going to start a garden, right? I have this, this half bag of potatoes that have started to sprout. And so I can't use them. Why don't you plant them? And I'm like, okay, why not? I mean, otherwise they would just get thrown out. Might as well throw them in the ground and see what I get out of them, right? If they sit in the ground and rot, oh well, I'll just use the soil for something else. It becomes fertilizer at that point. So yeah, it's man, I have gone full Samwise Gamgee on you.
You really have. I apologize, as I only the video people can see what I'm trying to. I'm trying to adjust headphone stuff while we're talking.
Yeah,
right.
It's fine. It disappeared for a moment. Yeah, it's been a thing that I've been doing here. It's not really the only thing. It's also camping season, which, you know, as soon as it was warm enough, actually, as soon as there was no snow on the ground, but not necessarily warm enough, my parents had the camper ready to go. And I was sitting around a campfire when it was 50 degrees outside, like basically humping the campfire, because I don't do cold very well. But I can do fires. So yeah, that was the first, that was the first weekend. That was a couple weeks ago, when we were still having frost, overnight. Now, no more frost. And we're looking at, good temperatures, going forward here. So, man, it is the time for me to be outdoors. And, man, it has been a hell of a
week. Because
I haven't really been on here for like 3 or 4 episodes, right? So, yeah, it's been a minute. That's not all I've been doing. Like, there's a mushroom festival that happens in my hometown. Yep. Definitely full on Hobbit town. We celebrate fungus. And I made pasties for, we made 1,818 pasties in a weekend. That is insane. Those are fantastic, and I have some in my freezer. They're great. If you don't know what a pasty is, just think of a pot pie without the gravy. You add the gravy on top. Pretty much what it is, the defining flavor that you get out of it is rutabaga. If you've never had rutabaga, you and about 85 to 90% of the population are in good company, because it's not a very popular vegetable. But it is basically what you the flavor is what you get if you cross a potato with a radish. Probably the closest you can get. Like, more potato than radish, but still radishy. It's kind of peppery, but it's also kind of starchy. It is a root vegetable, and when you buy it at the store, it is one of the only vegetables that's packaged with wax.
Rutabaga.
Rutabaga, yep.
Yeah,
rutabaga is packaged with wax. They dip it in wax when they ship it out. It is a weird thing, but that's what keeps it fresh. So perfect. It sucks for peeling, that's for sure. But yeah, there was that. There was I did some things with some buddies just the other week, where I went downstate for a big conference. It was the 200th gathering of the Michigan Masons. So I went down there, and the biggest thing that happened during that time was the Oklahoma degree team, came and did their thing for us. And that is a unique experience. I got to meet some of the guys. And they knew a mutual friend of ours. They knew David. So I was good. I got to talk to them, and they're like, "Hey, you know David? We apologize." So he's a good friend and an old coworker of ours. But yeah, outside of that, I've played games. I'll let you guys talk for a little bit though, and I'll tell you, if some of my games overlap with yours.
I don't know. Jason, you've been putting up a pool, right?
Yep, I've been putting up a pool. That's what I've been working on yesterday and today, is getting that going. But I have, of course I've played more Slay the Spire this week, and Slay the Spire 2, let me be clear. And I also picked up, because it's currently on sale, and I've been playing around with it, a little roguelite called Tape to Tape.
Tape to Tape.
Yep.
That's okay.
Think a roguelite NFL Blitz for hockey.
Okay. All right. That's...
Yeah, it took me a second to figure out what he was talking about. He was talking about it earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I posted a link in our chat thing. But, yeah.
So it takes hockey and does some over-the-top stuff with it.
Yeah.
And then roguelite. How is that roguelite? I'm having a hard time.
It's all over the top because so the roguelite elements are skills, which are random drops.
Okay.
As well as equipment boosts. In the campaign, basically your mission's just going through a diverging pass to get to the championship, right? So you can in later stages you can choose which team will go up against, etc. You recruit your team much like you would recruit your roster for Darkest Dungeon or most other roguelike games.
So they're random set of skills.
Random set of skills, random stats, etc.
Okay.
And I say NFL Blitz Lite because some of your skills, for example, allow you to body check a player out completely off of the ice. One skill allows you to throw your stick to knock players down.
Oh, nice.
Or slap shot a dude in the face. Stuff like that. So
bounce the puck off of their nose or some shit?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Or even tie the goalie up. There's one thing you can trigger where you can tie up the opposing goalie to the goal so the goalie can't move.
That's... You just tie him up?
Yeah.
Okay. That's... Alright. It's just... That's weird. Okay.
So think like... Think like your... Think like your... like your older, top-down NHL hockey, from, Super Nintendo and stuff. But with roguelike player recruiting and skills.
Interesting. So, yeah, that's... This is where, indie games really shine. It's let's take this, this concept of a game and just like pepper in some weirdness to it, and it turns into something completely, you know, different and fun and unique and just, yeah, you don't get that anymore. Like,
yeah, no, you don't. And you know, it's the only people I've ever heard really talk about it, because it's still in early access, so it's not like a full release game yet. But the only people I've ever heard talk about it, and this will seem like stereotypical because they're Canadians, but is Linus and Luke on the Wind Show.
Oh.
But it's on sale right now, so I was like, I'm going to pick it up. Because I watched gameplay a few times, etc. Okay. I was like, if nothing else, it'll be once I can get something run out to the living room for it, or I get a dock for my Ally to be able to hook it up to the TV and the living room, etc. It is actually a couch co-op game.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So you can have up to 5 players playing on the one game session. Oh. So if you had all on the same team, or you can split up, however you want to do it.
Is it like 5v5? Is that what the deal is?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, you can literally, if you had 2 machines running game, you could have a full, like, 5v5, 10 players playing the same, or playing against each other.
You look pretty sick. I was,
and there aren't many couch co-op games out there. So
no, trust me, I know. Been playing. Like, I've looked at stuff because me and my girlfriend like to co-op, and right now I'm at like 155 hours in Slay the Spire 2 because we've been playing that almost every night now since it came out. That game's still good. Genuinely find at 150 odd hours, like, finding new builds is actually kind of a neat thing. But I didn't tell you guys this, but I had, so, you know, I have my real job, and then I have my fun job, and then I have my other fun, this is more hobby than job, but I had to go to West Virginia for work. And it's not an easy place to get to. I have to go to, which I won't say too much about where it's at, so, because it gives too much away where I work, because where it's at is probably the biggest thing there. Mm-hmm. But the,
right.
So I hopped a plane. I left at 11:15. I left the house at 11:15 on Wednesday at a.m. And then I got to Atlanta by about 3. And then I got to Roanoke, Virginia at about 6, and then, well, almost 7, and then by the time I got dinner and then drove over, I had got to Princeton, West Virginia, which is where I was staying, because my work was, that's the closest place that has normal hotels, mm-hmm. The place that I needed to go, and I didn't get there till 9:30 at night on Wednesday, and then Thursday I pulled a 12-hour day at work. I was trying to maximize how much I needed to do without having to do more than one trip or more than one day so I could get back. And then I have, I actually don't mind saying this. I've been doing a lot of photos for a band called A Killer's Confession. If you guys have ever heard of Mushroom Head, it's another band that is associated with them. Main vocalist for them used to be probably the 3 best Mushroom Head albums. But anyways, I've gotten a lot of good favor and vibes with those guys, so I've been doing a lot of photos for them anytime they're anywhere local. And this is the second time this year I shot them. But I adjusted my trip so that Friday I could shoot photos. So literally Friday, I left my hotel at 6 in the morning from Princeton, West Virginia. Got to the airport at 7:45 a.m. because it's a pretty far drive. Drove from there, or flew from there to Charlotte, and then from Charlotte to here. Got back here at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Had 4 hours to unpack and, like, unload and do laundry and get my camera gear ready to then go and shoot photos that night. So I needed to be at the venue early. So anytime I shoot photos for bands, for the most part, I get there whenever doors open, and then I just kind of scope the place out, make sure everything's how it needs to be. Make sure that I don't have any misunderstandings. I've run into that before, so I guess I have a little bit of PTSD from that. Like, long story short, about a year and a half ago, I was set to shoot Dark Funeral, and I guess they decided at the very end, I'm not going to throw too much shade here, but I got permission from the band and payment from the band, but didn't get permission from the manager who got somebody else to shoot. So I had to refund them, and I got to shoot up to that band. And of course, the venue was like, yeah, we don't make the rules. Sorry, bud. You're going to have to take all your stuff back to your car. So it just ended up being a show for me.
Right.
Which, that really annoyed the hell out of me. But anyways, at this point, I'm really good with that venue. In fact, that venue hires me for stuff, too. So, yeah, I've been going, and I've been playing Steam Deck a lot. Like, I do have some major AAA titles that I'd like to play, but they don't really play well on the Steam Deck. So, for example, Pragmata does not play well on the Steam Deck. Subnautica 2 also doesn't play well on the Steam Deck. It does not stream well on shit internet in the middle of nowhere, West Virginia.
Right.
It also doesn't play on a plane, because their Wi-Fi on the plane sucks.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I've been really busy with work and stuff, and the only thing I've really been playing is roguelikes like Jason. I've been playing a lot of Atomicrops. I've gotten really good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that game's old.
Yeah, I remember that shit.
It's a good game. It's a twin-stick shooter that... So, basically what you do is you start off with, like, a little, like, farm plot, right? And every little square is where you can plant crops, and the crops are how you make cashews, which are your currency to buy upgrades. The idea is that you hold one button on your controller to plant stuff, which is, it'll till, you know, it'll dig a hole if you've got the right, I don't know why it's a pickaxe and not a shovel, but basically to expand your farm plot, you need a pickaxe. So you expand it with the pickaxe, then you got to till it, and then you can plant the seeds, and then you got to water it. But basically you go find seeds by fighting enemies. Usually. And then you get a lot of random upgrades throughout the run based on what kind of cashews. Like, the name of the game is raise as much cashews as possible. And there's, like, little combos you can do on your farming to make yourself get more money.
Yeah, you have to manage, like, watering the shit too, right?
So it's super. That part's easy. Like, literally you hit the well and then you just shoot water at whatever needs watered. So you just walk around your farm plot, but every night you defend against waves of enemies. It's like a bullet hill. It's not a real hard bullet hill. Like, can usually complete a full run. I'm up to where I can start at year 4, and you've got some permanent upgrades, but, like, the name of the game is, like, how long can you make it? And the upgrades are interesting. You upgrade your stats as you do your run. And then after the run's over, you use cornucopias to upgrade your overall power level of sorts. Like, at this point, when I start a new run, like, I get a random assortment of things I had left over from the last run, so that run is more powerful getting started. Okay. But is it a fun game? Yeah. They've released a lot of DLC for it, even free DLC. I'm trying to unlock some more characters. I bought that game I had it on Epic a long time ago, and then I bought it on a Steam sale, I want to say last year, and I didn't really ever play it. I was like, you know what? I miss playing this game. This game used to be, what I remember, it was pretty good. And it's really good. Atomicrops, good art style too. Very, kind of Looney Tunes. Like, pixelated Looney Tunes.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, that also kind of jives. I think I picked that.
It's pretty fast paced, right? Like you plan everything in the morning or while you're fighting at night. You go explore an area and then try to get some seeds and things like that while you're exploring, and then before the day's over, head back to your plot, harvest whatever you had growing during the day, plant some new stuff. Basically just defend your farm plot as you get attacked by waves of stuff, and the boss fights are really cool too. It does this weird like 3D, 2D thing. Like whoever does the pixel art in this game is freaking amazing. Same with the animations. It's top-notch done as far as that stuff's concerned. And the upgrades to your stuff's pretty interesting. Like, at one point, like, as long as I've got stuff in with three or more in a line, I don't even have to till the soil like on this run I was doing earlier today. You just hold the plant button, it tills the soil and plants several plants in a row. But yeah, it's pretty fun. It's usually super cheap, too. $15 or less, usually.
If you don't have it right, you know, like, right now, as soon as you hear this, there's a promotion. It's 80% off right now till June 10th. It's $2.99 for the base game, or $7.70 for all of the DLCs, plus the base game. It's a no brainer if you don't have it. It's literally cheap.
Right.
I've spent more on seeds. I'm not sure when you'll be hearing this, but yeah, it's $15 normally, and that very often goes on sale, so it's definitely worth picking up. I do remember playing this. Yeah, I remember like one of the bosses is like a very angry son.
Yeah. The end boss for like the end of the one of the end bosses for one of the end of the years is like a crazy a biological vegetable or a radioactive vegetable that casts radiation all over the place.
There is a boss called the Bundertaker.
I wonder how many bosses there are. You can go pretty fucking far in that game, and I have only scratched the surface of that game. That's why I was like, I'm just gonna start playing it again. Because I never got past year 4 last time. It was like, it goes through like year 20.
Well, yeah. And the DLCs add even more. So there's a lot there. For something that plays well on a Steam Deck, yeah, go for it, dude. Yeah.
And that was also part of my reason behind Tape to Tape was, yeah. Definitely easy Steam Deck. Like, handheld PC choice.
That's the, that is one of the, you know, the benefits of these, these indie titles, these types of indie titles, is they tend to be lightweight. And lightweight means, you know, you can play these games on, you know, the handheld consoles. Or, if you're on a business trip and you don't have, say, like a gaming PC, but you do have a PC that can show a game, it may not be in the highest frame rate, but I can tell you that I've tried. And like the Rackpoint game that I was playing, it plays perfectly well on my work computer if you're at work. I don't condone working or playing games on your work computer unless you're on break or you have special permission from IT, but I am IT, so I gave myself permission. It's fine. It's fine. but yeah, it's, it is one of those things that I do look at now is these lightweight, fun games that just toss shit at the wall. And a lot of times, it sticks well. And even if it is a pick-up and put-down new game, like Atomic Crops, you probably get through you get through a play session fairly quickly, right?
Yeah, like I don't think a run lasts longer than 30 minutes if you're successful.
That's like a full run.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that is...
Those are good games, though. Something
you can fit into a day, you know?
I've been so busy lately, like I still have... I did all these landscapes, and I've been working on those. And right now, I haven't had... I've got, like, I've decided I wasn't going to pick up anything unless it was just ginormous recently until I really worked my way through some backlog stuff. But honestly, like, it's freed me up to get done with other stuff in life, too. So I've been, like, these pick-up, put-down games, right? Like, me and my girlfriend playing Slay the Spire 2. And it's been really cathartic because I'm not in that headspace of... I've got to beat this right now because I bought it. Right? Like, I got Subnautica on Game Pass. Been picking away at that, but it's definitely, you know, it's first pass early access.
I remember, like, the first Subnautica early access, and there wasn't really much to it. I heard that that it's got more, Subnautica 2 has more to it than the initial release of Subnautica. But.
Yeah, I haven't gotten deep. I haven't gotten the submarine, right? Like, I just scanning blueprints and building out. I probably built way too close to the starter zone. So if I want to go back into that, I need to move my base somewhere slightly more dangerous so that I have more to do. But it's still Subnautica. It's more Subnautica, and that's not a bad thing.
Right. Yeah. I've only heard like the shitty news stories that, you know, that's come out from it. Like, there's a whole lot of drama behind the scenes as far as, like, the developers versus the publisher and...
Oh, yeah, there's...
$250 million payout or something like that based off of, you know, performance. It's all really shitty. And I can tell you right now, the more successful that this game is between now and the deadline for that, the more that the publisher will end up having to pay, you know, the developers what they promised, because, you know, the court is basically forcing them to do so. It's kind of a double-edged sword in a way, because the developers are going to get paid, but it's in a way that it's going to end up hurting the publisher of the game that is, you know, it's weird. It's a really weird situation where, you know, your support of the game can actually benefit the developers and hurt the company that's getting it out to you. And it's unique in that way. They did it to themselves, though. I want nothing but great things for Subnautica 2 because I enjoyed the hell out of the first game.
Yeah, it's easily one of my favorite games.
You know, I enjoyed, like, Below Zero a little less, but that was just because it focused more on running around on land and not the, you know, the thalassophobia that I, you know, inducing shit of, like, going ever deeper. And I think that's what the first game really got me on. It's like, I am forcing myself to go deeper and darker and see weirder shit and, you know, like, push myself into, you know, into a, oh, fuck, I can, you know, I can lose a lot of progress, you know, style things. I know when you get to the last area, it's really nerve-wracking because you've got basically your entire base and you're taking it with you.
Yeah, because you're just in a submarine.
Yeah, you're in a submarine at that point. You don't really need the base for anything. You've got everything in the submarine, you know, at that point. So you lose the submarine and you're, like, you're kicked back quite a ways. But, yeah, it's just a unique experience out in a... And I want to see the best version of that. So, yeah, I downloaded it because a download counts as a, you know, a download on Game Pass still counts towards their metrics for how successful the game is. So if you have Game Pass, no-brainer, download that shit. Even if you're not going to, like, even if you're only going to put, like, maybe 5-10 hours into it now and just kind of let it cook, do that, because, I mean, that's also going to be the metric. And I'll tell you right now, what the publisher did, that was pretty shitty.
Did you end up playing any other games?
Me? I have actually played a few more games. So, let's see. I'm going through my thing here. I kind of set Crimson Desert aside.
I did the same thing because of time constraints.
Yeah, it's just like
I've only had like an hour to. I've only had an hour at a time to dig in, and for a while. And that's not enough to chew through parts of that game.
Right. So there's been enough of that game that's changed, and I know how that game plays now, that I could probably start that game fresh, experience things new, and do it in a more efficient, more focused way. Because I did do a lot of, like, retreading and, you know, experimentation on my first, you know, run. So I'm going to give it a little bit more time. It's got a lot of updates, and they're continuing to support it. Great. I'm just going to let that sit for a minute. What I've been playing in the meantime was I played even more Diablo 4, the new expansion came out for it, and I did play through all the story bits. I have... right at the beginning of that of the story kind of sucked hard, and I didn't like how it started. And I can tell you by the end of the campaign, it does put a bow on the whole, you know, on the whole story. And it was kind of interesting how they. So it was, yes, it is very much a Diablo game. They changed a lot with how that game plays. It is practically a new game, in how the skill tree works, how the end game works, how itemization works with this expansion. They, you know, reintroduce the Herodric Cube, which allows you to basically craft weapons and armor specific to certain types of affixes and things like that, so you can spend resources to really fine-tune some shit. The skill trees, which were really tied to, like, passives, which your build was one, you know, could be one way, and that's how you played the game. Now the builds basically are augments to the abilities that you can do. And the passives all live on the equipment. So now you could actually build different, you know, pieces of, you know, equipment or different sets of equipment to do different things with the same skills, which is kind of neat. There's additional, you know, additional classes within the Paladin and the Warlock. Warlock is like, if you think of like Necromancer, but he controls demons, and can use some forms of crowd control, like take control of demons, that are attacking you, and, like, you know, force them to fight their allies, or just, like, channel the demonic energy right through yourself and just kind of, like, turn yourself into a half-man, half-demon hybrid and just go to town. It is, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of build variety for Warlock. but it's a hell of an expansion. Like there is a lot to do at the end. There's a thing called war plans, and the war plans are basically kind of like a roguelike set of challenges that you can like randomly roll to get you to a set of rewards. So it used to be Diablo 4, once you get to the to the end game, it's your choice. You could do bosses, you could do the tower or the pit, you could find all the things, you could itemization and build just the best character you possibly can. But all of those things were just not, like, there wasn't a path to those things. You just had to choose to do it. The war plans would be, gives you, like, you have to do a number of successful runs in the tower, and then fight a boss, and then go do some stuff during the Hell Tides. Like you have to kill a certain boss during Hell Tide, and you have to go find a raid boss or like a world boss and do that. And it's a bunch of different activities in a line. And as you do those activities, you check off objective boxes, and that will give you a better reward at the end. And you can go through those fairly quickly. You can get different qualities of them, so you can get some that are will give you really good quality gear. Some of them that will give you like a variety of different gear. Sometimes it'll give you materials so that you can craft gear. It gives Endgame a structure and a purpose, which it desperately needed. And I think that sets up Diablo 4 for probably the next few years, just running different events that use that system. So that's great. Diablo has been a game that I keep going back to every so often, because Path of Exile is way too, you have to have a college degree to understand, the skill trees in that game. And some of the other ARPGs are either too simple or they just don't have the itemization and staying power of some of these. Before Path of Exile, Path of Exile is just super complicated. That's one of the games that I played. The other game that I want to shout out, because it just kind of struck me as is very interesting, is Lunar Abyss. It is a Game Pass game, and that game is a first-person, an FPS bullet hell.
What's it called again?
Luna Abyss.
Oh, wait, that was on Game Pass, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I looked at it, but I hadn't tried it yet.
Yeah, it is fairly simple so far. I've only got 2 hours into it. But it starts to kind of open up different ways to traverse the areas and different enemies that require you to use different guns to be able to like get past their defenses and do some things. Like you spend a lot of time like working out the best way to dodge the bullets that are coming at you. It's not like Returnal dodging where you have to like hit a dodge button. This is more,
Is it as good as Witchfire?
Witchfire is its own kind of thing. Witchfire is more of a roguelike. Luna and Abyss is more of a it's more story driven. Like you're learning stuff about the what happened before and what's happening now. But it's run off of a backdrop of like you're playing as a character that was sentenced to a penal colony for 9,500 days or some bullshit, which is a long ass time. But you have to do missions for the penal colony to reduce your sentence, and you do that by jacking into a thing called a warden. So you are putting your consciousness into kind of like a machine, and that machine is what you control through, through the different arenas. And you scout through these arenas and find, find objects and do things for the penal colony. I'm trying to be as vague as possible because there's story here. As you go along, you run into a situation that changes your perspective and how you can traverse and get around and do things.
Is it?
And that makes it, it makes things more, I don't want to say Metroidvania because you don't go backwards, but you end up getting skills that allow you to move.
Yeah.
So, you do end up hitting something like a double jump and stuff like that, but that allows you to continue on in the level that you're in and not necessarily go back. It's, like I said, from what I've found so far, it's relatively simple. Like, it's not the hardest game in the world, but it's unique. And I really like the idea of like first-person bullet hell. I just couldn't get into things like because it was incredibly hard. You don't necessarily need my shit pushed in when I sit down to play a game.
Not like that. Anyway.
So this has been fairly relaxing. Kick back, relax, and then kind of just enjoy it. It's best played in a dark room because there's a lot of blacks and reds in this game. It does a lot with color cues. So, some of your hidden items is going to be based off of like a color cue in the background or something you can kind of see off in the distance. So it's best played in dark. It's been a fun game. I'll play a little bit more of it as time goes on. I haven't really put too much into anything else, just because I've been so busy. I haven't really played anything this weekend because I've been outside baking the crap out of my neck. It's been a fun time. I've got some. There is a couple games that are just on the backlog, like some Knockout 2. High on the backlog here. But I haven't really found anything that I absolutely needed to play. Which is good. Because summertime, I like to have that freedom. Right? Like to be able to go out and do whatever.
Yeah. I can understand that.
Well, there is one that was recommended to me that could possibly be a candidate for like a Steam Deck game called Mina the Hollower, and it's made by the same guys that did Shovel Knight, but it's it follows like this mouse character and is a top-down action adventure game that looks fairly unique. It just came out, $20, and it came out very highly recommended to me from a couple people. So that's on the radar.
Well, do you guys want to take a quick break, and then we'll wrap this up?
Sure.
Yep, sounds good.
All right, guys, we'll be back. Back.
Woohoo. What'd you do, Lolo?
Dog's being mischievous.
For a lot of people, woohoo's not necessarily the thing they wanna say when they look at trying to buy anything new gaming. You know, Xbox price hiked, PS4 or PS5 got a price hike. Nintendo Switch 2 got a price hike.
PlayStation.
Mm-hmm. That's why I said PS5. Now, the Steam Deck got a price hike.
Them did. Ryan prices.
Yep. So they completely discontinued the LCD version of the deck. So that $399 base model is gone.
What I have.
Unless you happen to find one secondhand or they get some refurbished units, which I seriously doubt will happen with any regularity. And then the 512 gigabyte version of the OLED deck is now up from $549 to $789. And the 1 terabyte version saw a $300 price hike from $649 to $949.
Good Lord.
According to reporting from Ars Technica, this still didn't stop the U.S. and Canadian Steam stores from selling out almost immediately.
Of course. Well, I'm gonna look on eBay.
Right.
Good luck. People are selling their secondhand Steam Decks pretty fucking expensive right now.
What I'm looking for is exactly that, though.
According to them, some of the other regional stores, at least as of this article's writing 3 days ago, the European and Australian storefront, as well as some of the Asian storefronts, still had stock.
Is the OLED 1 terabyte?
Both of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you
can still get
them. You could have ordered one a couple months ago, still for that. Still expensive, but so much better. $649 or $549. Those days are now done.
Yeah, most of the stuff that I'm seeing on here is pre-owned. There's a couple listings on here that are brand new. So my initial thought was, oh, they're getting scalped, right? It's not the case.
These are old ones.
These are all old ones. Now the price of the old ones have bumped up to the price of the new ones. Or higher than what they, probably purchased them for.
I'm looking at eBay and Facebook Marketplace, just, you know, looking at sweat listed. And Jawa, because Jawa is another fairly decent site.
Well, we're actually in right now.
And most of the ones listed are actually still hovering around what the original MSRP was, but that's not what you want to buy a used device for.
That's exactly my point here. So what I'm looking at right now is, in the past year, 2 years or so, we're in a market for PC components that actually is, for the first time in memory, appreciating in value instead of depreciating. Where you can buy a piece of equipment right now, use it in your system for a period of time, and sell it for more than what you bought it for because of the shortage.
Oh yeah, I could sell mine for $450 right now, and I spent $349 on it.
I could sell my Ally Z1 Extreme that has a desoldered memory card port because of the heating issue, right? That I just haven't taken the time to try to fix myself. And I could go probably sell this for $800 when I literally bought it for $300 from a dude used before Thanksgiving. It's wild.
It's nuts. Absolutely nuts. Yeah, there's... It is a really bad time.
But you're also in the position where you don't necessarily want to sell something like that. Because you're not going to be able to comparably replace it.
Right.
I mean, if you don't use it, this would be a great time.
That's true.
Until I traveled a lot, I didn't use it a lot. And then, honestly, I use it almost daily gaming with my girlfriend because it's convenient to sit on the bed and play it.
Well, and I mean, like, for me, it's perfect because it lets me, you know, rejoin the family to play games most of the time because, you know, I'm not just in here in mine and my wife's bedroom just gooning on my PC. Like, you know, it works for me. And now, would I like to, you know, eventually put bigger battery in it so it'll actually, you know, play something for a couple hours without having charge? Absolutely.
You just need a laptop charge bank.
Well, I have one of those, but you know, you're talking like the thing is huge, it's heavy, you know, and I get about a charge and a half out of it, but yeah,
it's not that bad. Honestly, I've been using it lately. I haven't had to charge and play on the plane. There was a trip I did with Elden Ring, and Elden Ring drains the battery pretty quick. Had the laptop charger plugged in the whole time, and it gave me basically 2.5 charges, if that makes sense, right? So I've got about like 3.5 hours of Elden Ring, and with that battery bank, I got like 9 hours of Elden Ring, which is perfect. Because it's playing faster than it charges, honestly. Or it's draining faster than it charges. Or not quite. But anyways, you get the point. Like, it drains a lot of battery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of places to plug in on the plane.
No, there's not. I'm thinking about it. No, there's not. And they typically discourage you from charging laptop class devices on a plane. Which your Steam Deck and my Ally definitely are laptop class devices.
A lot of the power banks are too big.
That is true.
I know there's a specific size for
Though, I will say, I did learn an interesting hack to all of that. I could actually take it, the one I bought, the battery bank I bought at, like, the TSA limit, because I thought, well, if nothing else, it'll actually work for my CPAP, too, if, you know, if we were doing something like camping on the other end where power wasn't readily available or whatnot. And then somebody told me, you know, you can actually get a battery bank with longer battery life than that, if you're traveling with your CPAP, because that is medical equipment.
And yeah,
they cannot deny you medical equipment.
Yeah, but you have to have it, like, you have to carry it with you. And
yeah, you got to carry it on. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can get some pretty big batteries in a form factor like this.
Well, yeah. I mean, it goes the same thing for, like, you know, oxygen pumps and things like that that run on battery. You know, you're going to have to do that. What I'm looking at is for power banks for, you know, specifically that is built for the Steam Deck that you can kind of attach to the back of it. You can get the, so it looks like the discharge rate is 45 watt, and its power capacity is 20K milliamp hours, which is flight capable. So, that comes out to 74 watt hours, and that is below the 100 watt power limit. Which means that one of these battery banks would charge a standard laptop once to about 70%. So take that for what you will. You probably won't be able to carry more than one. Never had to run in that situation, but I guess it's still an option. And the battery banks are running about $50, $30 to $50, depending on if you decide to get it.
This one is 99 watt hours or 27,000 milliamp hours.
Yeah. See, 99 is like right. It's
like right there. Yeah. It's right there. But you can definitely get, you know, some that are definitely bigger. Just you have to have a, you know, if you're going to try to carry it on a plane, you've got to have a,
I just want you to,
you know, medical reason to be able to carry it.
I'm sitting here going, I'm watching Jason or Justin. Either one of them trying to justify to TSA that this jaggery is medically required.
Is medically required.
That they're definitely not going to be hooking it up to their freaking handheld gaming system while on the flight. No, I mean, it's...
You can get 160 watt hours per battery.
160 watt hours per battery. Yeah, but you can only take 100 watt hours per battery
TSA, on an airplane.
Yeah, TSA will not let you take anything more than 100 or above. That's why most of them come as 99s.
Yep.
It's all TSA because, you know, lithium ion batteries and, you know, batteries with that type of capacity, they can turn into incendiary devices if mishandled, you know, handled improperly, mishandled, things like that. Don't chuck it at the crying kid. Simple.
Pretty much.
But yeah, man. Shit's expensive these days. Ugh.
But either way, I mean, like I said, it's just one of those things where you know, we were looking at different stuff, and then we ran across this Archon. I mean, that's just ridiculous that basically because of memory prices, they added a $300 premium to the Steam Deck.
And yeah, like I said, before, prices like this, it's going to be really hard to find equipment cheaper. Like, you don't necessarily see prices go down. And it might be proven wrong, because this is kind of unprecedented. Like I said, you know, we're in the only time that I can feasibly remember that we're currently appreciating in value for computer parts instead of depreciating. This can't happen forever. There is a possibility that, you know, that prices come back down. It's happened with RAM before. It's happened in a way. It's happened with video cards, but not in a big way. First was like cryptocurrency that bumped the price up from what I considered normal to the new normal. Then it kind of hovered there for a bit. Now with AI, it's bumped it up even higher. What I anticipate seeing is that it's going to drop a little bit, maybe. If the AI bubble bursts, there's going to be a big issue, going forward, because a lot of the chip manufacturers have started to kind of go balls deep with the whole AI thing and leave their bread and butter customers, gamers and the like, just underserved. So they would have to retool their shit to make it, useful to us. There's going to be scarcity on top of all of that. I don't see the price of equipment actually going down. I just see that over a period of time, it'll become more available. But I don't see it going down. And that's unfortunate, because that just is a bigger barrier to entry for everything. My biggest hobby right now, and has been for years, has been video games. And what I can spend on video games right now, as a working adult, is a lot less than I could, 10 years ago.
It's true.
It would be impossible for me to think about like having a kid and that kid wanting to have the latest, greatest hardware, right? They want to be able to play games and do this. You'd have to take out a loan to be able to, to buy a piece of equipment, that plays games just as great as 8 years ago. I mean, that's where we're at right now. And that is, it sucks. It really does. I really genuinely hope that there's change in the future. And that shit, stops hitting the fan. But man, it's kind of a bleak situation right now. People are like, yeah, 1440p gaming is pretty good. They're even going down to like, 1080p is good enough. I don't need 4K right now.
Look, I ain't been gaming in 4K ever, and it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I've been playing games in 1440, on my ultra wide, and as long as games play, I'm not looking at changing anything in my machine. I dread the day that any part dies in that.
For me, it's about color accuracy. Am I going to get a lot of really good colors out of it?
The color accuracy, you can get decent color accuracy out of 1440p and a good monitor.
Yep.
That's all you need. You don't need anything more than that. Anything more than that is just, you know, is you get finer pixels. That's it. But if you're doing, if you're doing artistic work, you can actually zoom in to the pixel level. So you can make the pixels as big as you want on your screen. So, I mean, if you need to color correct that bad, do something wrong. I mean, just
right.
You know, say something more to that point, because he does it far more than I do. But I can tell you from working on artists' workstations, I am less worried about their resolution and more worried about the actual, like, processing throughput of the machine. Because, you know, if it takes, you know, X amount of time for, you know, for a render to happen, that's downtime for that person. But they can't do anything else because they're waiting on the machine to do it. But it takes them, you know, a few seconds to zoom in on, you know, a 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter piece of a piece of art, you know, and make it as big as they want. So that's just the IT dude in me saying, you don't need that shit.
Right.
You don't need that fucking $5,000 monitor, because you can do well with a $200 monitor. Okay? A $200 monitor and a color corrector.
But OLED is glorious.
Hey, it may be glorious, and everybody could be sitting here with a 4K, you know, 70-inch monitor on their desk. It's not feasible,
though. I don't want that. I just want, you know, a nice, you know, 32, 34-inch OLED monitor. Be fine. I want, when I go back to replay Dead Space, I want it black, sir.
Okay, so I wasn't sold on OLED until I got an OLED, and I can definitely tell you that an OLED is actually worthwhile. Do you need a huge one? No.
No.
Do you need a 4K one? No.
No.
Do you want the contrast? Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Because I can tell you from the Lunar Abyss, or Lunar Abyss game, the blacks and the reds, those wouldn't pop nearly as well on anything other than an OLED. And that's why I said it's best played in the dark room, because, you know, the lighting in that game is, you know, is set in such a way that it is how it directs you where to go. So, yeah.
And OLEDs are starting to get cheap.
Honestly, with the amount of shit that's happening in the gaming space, like gaming hardware, I'm floored whenever I go into like a big box store right now and see like 70-inch televisions, 80-inch televisions for freaking, you know, a lot less than I expect.
Oh yeah, that is the one part of the gaming space that hasn't been blown out of proportion by everything else. In fact, displays are still going down in price, especially with newer mini LED technologies finally coming in. For example, you can get a now, granted, it's a little bit older, but you can get one of, you know, like Samsung's original Odyssey G5 OLED gaming monitors. It's like 27 inches. And only pay $300 for it. Yeah, a couple of years ago, that was a $600 monitor.
The one I'm looking at right now is a $1,000 monitor. I could probably get that for a lot less right now. A lot less. Probably less than half. You know, just
so you know, if you're sitting there wondering whether or not you should even try to buy, you know, more RAM or upgrade your graphics card, etc., and you should go into debt for it, I say no, sir. Go buy yourself a decent monitor.
I agree with that. Monitors make you
believe it or not. A good monitor can be the biggest upgrade you ever do to your setup. Or, you know, even one of the cheaper OLED TVs or mini LED TVs, like the entry level, especially if you have a good dark room, because some of those cheaper displays don't get very bright, so reflection can be a bitch on them. But if you have a room where you're not worrying about much reflection, go do that. You can get a perfectly serviceable OLED or mini LED TV at, you know, 65, 75 inches for $600 to $800, where a couple years ago, those would run you well over a grand. And, it, you know, evidenced by Justin's TV and by Rusty's monitor. I still don't have OLED anything. I wish I did, because let me tell you, it looks great.
Yeah, I edit photos professionally on a 65-inch LED or OLED TV. I can pixel people like crazy with that thing. And it actually looks better than your phone screen for sure. Even though this phone screen's smaller, it compresses that resolution.
Well, that's the problem with phone displays, right? Is that your phone displays are, you know, compressing the image, especially when you're talking about, you know, streaming something from, say, Disney Plus or Paramount Plus or something like that. You know, all those things are being compressed to the point that it doesn't look great anymore. Like, it looks perfectly fine at that size, but you're not actually getting that deep of a pixel resolution. Whereas, you know, you go to OLED or mini LED on a large form factor TV, that's where really you notice the difference. But then again, I noticed the difference even just getting a, this $200 Sansui monitor that has local dimming zones on a LED LCD, right? Like, just the fact that it's got local dimming zones in HDR just was even a big upgrade for me. And I paid less than $200 for it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth looking into. Man, I have stuff. I got some stuff to do. I gotta go dig.
All of us got stuff to do. So with that, guys, find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/therealtiltcast. Then search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find friends of the show. You've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got, excuse me. Picking Up the Pixels or the Pupcast and TVGP.TV. They do great things. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right, guys.